Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
So, Nick, did this feel like the second-to-last episode of SmackDown before the Royal Rumble? There's a good number of things to talk about on the show, but building up anticipation for who's going to win the Rumble feels really distant from an actual Rumble that is now just 8 days away. Does that seem like a fair assessment of things?
No, Mr. Keller, we're not starting off with that question. We're starting off with this question. Are you ready for the most stupendous 2 hours of your life right now? That's my question. This does not feel like Royal Rumble season. This feels like Band-Aid season. This feels like, we had a real problem and that we gutted our A show, SmackDown, after the draft. Yeah. And after a series of bad luck, we have to get through to the next week. This does not feel like Royal Rumble season. It feels like there's little elements of it that makes you want to be excited for it. But, you know, my big takeaway of this week was we had to call in the reinforcements from Raw, who used to feel an awful lot like the old SmackDown, to make the new SmackDown feel not so bad like a poor SmackDown. And that's just the state of SmackDown as to where we are today.
Yeah, Michael Cole said it's Royal Rumble season, and that's why you're seeing Raw wrestlers on SmackDown. Is that truth in advertising, Nick? Is that why that was happening?
No. Well, I mean, maybe, but no. That's not at play this time. I mean, Maybe if it was next week, but, you know, this is a problem. This is a show that we used to be so excited for. And you know what, Wade? One thing that stuck out to me this week, and we can do a deeper dive into it with the callers and with you, is, you know, there's been times when SmackDown has even had a more shallow roster than it has right now, and they've made do. That was the Jey Uso as a main eventer era. And yet, here we are still with a roster, and there's just such a lack of inspiration with finding challengers to rise to the top, finding non-traditional ways to get some excitement on the brand. And, you know, it's so funny. It's hard to really pinpoint what the trigger was for this moment. It almost felt like it was that 1 week where Roman was gone for the day one pay-per-view, and suddenly all hell broke loose over here. But really, this was a buildup. This was a culmination of bad decisions and just, you know, lack of character development and a loss of really the premier element of SmackDown being having a solid babyface to go up against Roman Reigns that has really made this show damaged. And that's just, I think, the story of this week.
Well, what do you think is going on? I'm eager to get your take on what we saw last week and if it's the same, a different, or a continuation this week of what WWE is going for in the Seth Roman dynamic. I talked with Todd Martin about it yesterday on the Fix flagship simulcast. And my take last week was WWE is trying to get people to cheer Seth. Todd was thinking, it doesn't matter. Roman's coming off as cool, and the fans might turn him face too soon. Seemed like tonight the crowd was at least into Seth's song. What's your take on that dynamic here? And is this by design or just WWE trying to get through a tough spot? There might be 7 questions in there for you. Pick whatever.
Yeah, well, I think the answer is they want their cake and eat it too kind of moment. I think they want both to be cool, and they both want – they seem to alternate who is supposed to be the likable one in any particular moment. I think, you know, I think it's somewhere in the middle there with the two scenarios that you've described. I think at the various earliest days of this dynamic between Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, we were dealing with a situation where Roman was coming off looking way too much like a babyface. What was he doing that was heel-like? He was standing up and being open to any and all contenders that were going to be brought to him. He wasn't scared who was coming into his dressing room. And he kind of like laughed at the prospect of having Seth Rollins, you know, be his opponent. He came out, faced him man-to-man. There was no backup in that moment. And thankfully, they have pivoted away from that because, quite frankly, Roman Reigns as a heel, as a proper heel, is where the money is right now. You know, Seth Rollins today looked like a babyface to me, and he wrestled like a babyface to me. This was the most stark difference in terms of getting him a little out of that gray area. But it wouldn't surprise me if next week we were watching this talking about the opposite happening now. I do think ultimately both acts are going to be desired to stay in the heel lane without anyone doing a proper babyface turn. But for right now, you need to have someone at least remotely likable to root for in this match. And I think in this case, it is Seth Rollins who now WWE is saying this is the one you should be rooting for. I don't know how you can after watching this week's show.
Yeah, so talk about what you think made Seth likable this week and how much of it was intentional.
Well, the thing that made him likable was he wasn't Roman Reigns, who was acting like a heel. That was, you know, that's no different than what WWE has done booking-wise in the past when there's no turn. It's just this person is not this person, so there, aren't you happy with them now? But, you know, it was more than that. I mean, it was, you know, there's you know, just a confidence that was there with him that wasn't verging into cockiness. There was just a level of you know, just a presentation to me that just wasn't going into the dastardly. It was more in the corny. I don't know how else
it was
to say.
Bombastic, like, bombastically happy.
Okay, the fact that you pulled that word out of nowhere, yes, that is exactly what it was. So
okay, with all due respect to Corbin, yes.
Oh yes, there you go. You know, I think it worked. You know, I think it was likable enough. You know, he's you know, still slimy, but that's him. And like I said, in the match, I mean, in the main event, which, gosh, that just filled so much time. I felt like that show went on for 4 hours, for the record. You know, but the whole last half hour, I mean, if you were to have, if you have no backing of the history of the performers in that ring and just had the show on mute, Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens would be undoubtedly the babyfaces from how they wrestled. And that's honestly just the best way I can describe that he's the babyface is because by watching him, he behaved an awful lot like a babyface tonight.
Well, and on Raw on Monday, the Usos attacked Seth. This week, Roman Reigns attacked Seth. I mean, it's being booked. Oh, and they played to the hot tag, and the Usos stopped Seth from getting the hot tag. And then when Seth got it, he had this dynamic high spot at ringside. The crowd popped. They're singing his song. This is WWE framing Seth to get cheered, which means they don't want Roman to get cheered yet. And I don't know, you know, that means 3 months from now or 2 years from now, eventually they're going to want Roman to be cheered. That's not now. That I think whatever ambiguity there was before tonight, that's kind of the biggest happening on this show is WWE wants Seth to get cheered. We still have the dynamic, Nick, of KO and Seth and Kevin Owens saying, "You're my best friend." We didn't really get a big culmination of that in this match. Is that finished at the Rumble? Does KO get involved? And that leads to Seth as a babyface against KO? Like, what's the end game for KO and Seth at this point, do you think?
Well, I think I've said on our Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure, I think
the
end game is, yeah, me either. But they, I think that they are going, I think they together are facing each other at WrestleMania. I think that is a WrestleMania match. So I think whether the breakup happens at Royal Rumble or not, I think we are headed to, you know, you made the list part two. I think this is Kevin Owens's pathology. Find a friend, break up with a friend right before WrestleMania, and there's your match. And I do think that's ultimately where we are going with those two.
Is it 100% Seth's the babyface and KO's the heel in that?
No, not 100%, because like I said, I still think we're walking away with enough thinking that Seth could be a heel. And I just think, listen, it might be more fun for Kevin Owens to be a heel. I do think he's an exceptional heel. Ultimately, though, when you're going around using the Stone Cold Stunner, you're a babyface, whether you want to admit it or not.
Yep. And when you're just as talented, perpetually talented and engaging a personality of Kevin Owens, it's tough to you got to be against a really good babyface to get booed.
Yeah, and that too.
Yep. All right, very good. Well, let's pause and introduce the show and ourselves. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, January 21st, 2022. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and also the host of a variety of VIP podcasts like The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Van, Post Pay-Per-View Roundtables, and the Wade Keller Hotlines, including the Focus on AEW and Focus on WWE shows. But we are here doing one of our free shows that I host, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Yesterday on our Blue Logo show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, PW Torch VIP analyst Todd Martin joined me. We spent over 2 hours covering current events in professional wrestling, starting with Jon Moxley's return and the Cody promo. Nick, you didn't watch that, did you?
I think you know the answer to that.
I know. Every once in a while I think there might be enough buzz about something. You're like, go check that out online or something.
I mean, if you send it to me, I'll watch it. That's my standard.
Yep. So check that out if you haven't yet. It was our Thursday flagship. A lot of good stuff on that show, including a discussion about Looney Tunes and Popeye and what if they are both not required, but if people ought to know, have a level of familiarity with both the Popeye cartoon and Looney Tunes. Where are you on that, Nick?
Oh, well, yes, obviously.
Both?
Well, most especially Popeye for, like, what the visual represents, and Looney Tunes for, I'm assuming the use was something looks like it was meant to be out of Looney Tunes. I mean, I couldn't go character for character with you, though.
It was just I had mentioned people ought to know Popeye. Like, Todd was like, reference. And Todd's like, people don't need – I wouldn't say people ought to know Popeye. And the debate resurfaced last night on the show. So anyway, people can check that out. I think I've heard from a variety of people who are very pro-Popeye, and I haven't heard from anyone saying, no, Popeye's not – doesn't race to the standard of you should be familiar with it so you understand pop culture references.
Wade, my jaw is just ajar at this point. that is the feud that is happening on the Blue Logo show.
Totally. Well, yes. A spirited, friendly discussion. If you can hear Todd represent his case better than I just restated it, because I always feel like I'll do Todd's argument justice when I reframe it.
Well, you have to have Todd and I back together. That's like Godzilla and Mothra at this point. Like, and that is a reference I would want someone to tackle me on.
Popeye and Brutus.
There you go. I don't know who Brutus is. So there
Pluto.
You go.
It's Popeye's rival.
Oh, gotcha.
Wait a second. You're advocating for Popeye being part of pop culture and you don't know who's rival?
I know Popeye and olive oil. Deeper than that, Wade, you need
Sweepy?
A social life.
Sweepy?
Sure. That sounds familiar.
I watched Popeye in fourth grade before school at my friend's house every day, and we'd just rip it apart for how unrealistic it was because, you know, we were 10.
What year was that?
Yeah, a long time ago, yeah. All right. So the other voice you hear is Nick Barbati. He mentioned the show that he is part of on the PW Torch VIP podcast lineup. If you're not a VIP member, you're missing out on some of the most stupendous pro wrestling podcasts out there. It's a great lineup of shows, truly, and a great variety of informed and entertaining personalities talking about professional wrestling, all kinds of different formats. Go VIP. It is worth it just to hear Nick and Tom take issue with how I characterize their relationship and their dynamic. The innuendo per hour that you fit in to make Tom feel uncomfortable is enough reason to go VIP and make it a weekly weekend destination. Nick Barbati of Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure, welcome.
Oh, I'm the one making him uncomfortable. You know, it's a little bit of the reverse, Wade. And I must say, I pull issue with the fact that I think how you characterize our show is like, it's like a couple jealousy, like you wish you and Todd had what we have. Like, I just think like that's really what's coming through here. I'm glad to be back here. Wade, you know how much I love this and love the callers. We've had some of the callers on to Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Venture, which is, for my money, the best show on PW Torch, but I love the whole arsenal of shows, which is saying something. So I'm glad to be back.
I'm sorry. Again, what's your favorite show?
Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure.
The one you're part of.
You know what? That's an unbiased point of view because I go back and listen to it every week and am amused by my own jokes every single time. Like it's the first time I've heard it.
I do have to tell you, every time that Tom says something that you're going to make an innuendo comment about.
Anticipate it. Don't you?
I know it's coming. I mean, that's how my mind works. I hear what you hear. I'm walking my dog on Saturday afternoons listening, and yep, there it is. Nick did the same thing I did.
Yeah, Wade, you've taught me the art of waiting in the moment and then unleashing it once it's ready. So the couple years I've spent with you has got me well prepared.
All right. So, yeah, good times. I was going to say something else about that. Oh, yeah, and I love the room rating. You know how, like, there's room rating during the pandemic on Twitter when there's people on television, and there's, like, this Twitter account that rates their room, and you're always giving Tom a hard time about his clothing, you know, I don't know, is it frumpy? Is it too casual?
Oh, my God. Wait, it looks like something out of a hostage video, what I look at on these Saturday mornings. Yeah. Like, the video needs to get released somewhere because here I'm bringing high fashion and Tom is bringing I'm not sure if he's not in like a jail somewhere over in Great Britain and we're just making up this whole apartment thing. And what's with the seagulls? Why are there seagulls squawking at me on a Saturday morning, 8 a.m.? Like, this, no, something's not adding up over there, but I love them.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll move on with our SmackDown discussion here. We want you to join us. Our phone number to join the show, if you're listening to our live stream, which is available, by the way, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, about 5 minutes or so after the show's end. We try to get going as soon as possible. The place to find a link to the live stream is on our Twitter account, at PWTorch, or on my TV reports. At the top and bottom, you'll see a link at PWTorch.com. Look for Keller's TV report on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, and there's a link there. Or you can just go to WadeKellerPostShow.com and click on the link to the latest show. Lots of ways to find the live stream. It's a fun way to listen because we're live without a net, no ads, and you get to call in if you want and join us. And that invitation stands right now, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. After you call in, that will flag you on Switchboard. You can also email the show, even if you don't listen live, and then listen back and see if we deem your email worthy of reading on the air. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. All right, let's get to phone calls. We're going to start with Kyle. I haven't talked to Kyle, it feels like, in a month or so. On deck after that will be Nick and Brattleboro. Everybody on hold, stay with us, and we'll get to you. Kyle, welcome. You are first up.
Hey.
What's on your mind about tonight? Hey.
So overall, this is a good episode of SmackDown, which is surprising. Usually SmackDown is not that great. It's about Roman Reigns himself, but luckily it was incredible. But the reason why it was a good show is because we had Raw people on the show. Like, I didn't say it here, but for last – every time I have called in about SmackDown, it's just about the Roman Reigns show and no one else matters. And that's kind of been kind of telling even tonight, the fact that they brought in, I don't know how many people from Raw they have. It was Owens, Rollins, I don't know who else came from Raw, I forget now, but they brought these people from Raw to SmackDown because of the lack of stars. That's the main problem because of, I think of all this stuff with Roman Reigns, of who he faced, pretty much a one and done thing with Edge, with Daniel Bryan, and I forget who else he faced all throughout the John Cena. It's like one and done. And now they're doing the same with Seth Rollins, which is, look, I'm more of a Rollins fan than Roman Reigns. Really, I like Reigns, but I'm more a fan of Rollins. So I think with this match, it's going to be a fun match and a fun situation. But after that is go it. If Rollins goes back to Raw, which he probably will because he's a Raw superstar, then I just think it's just, to me, I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, because tonight was good and maybe next week will be good because they're bringing Raw people on this show. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, what's going to be next after that? Because lately, SmackDown has been great, and this was the first time SmackDown has been watchable. So what do you think about that situation with everything that happened tonight with Big E coming to SmackDown and Rollins and Owens?
Nick, why don't you respond to that?
Well, I think you're right, Kyle. I think the fact of the matter is that, you know, they needed to tag in the Raw folks to be able to make today's show successful. I mean, can you imagine the show without those individuals? I mean, we were already struggling even with those folks. Then you got to also add in the wax figure that used to be known as Eric Bischoff, who was there, and Jeff Jarrett. And, like, they were really trying to make this season suddenly feel that it was, you know, important and that there were happenings, but it really just felt like we were just trying to make do. So, yeah, I totally agree that, you know, that the show was basically made by the Raw team coming over. And, you know, is that sustainable, or are we just going to see all the way through WrestleMania season just a total abandonment of the brand split? I think that's an absolute possibility. The feeling with today's show, though, it's just funny that it just – even with all of that talent added there, it almost felt like an old taped SmackDown show. There wasn't a sense of urgency that's there. It's honestly an urgency that anymore seems to only be present when Brock Lesnar is there. So, yeah, you know, Kyle, I'm surprised to say that you liked the show, although it wasn't, I didn't find it as bad of a show as the tweets that I was getting during the show were indicating. It was okay. And you kind of expect better than that at Royal Rumble season. So, I mean, that's my take on it.
Yeah, they had a little video feature on the Rumble, but it just doesn't feel like we're on the verge of Rumble season. Cole was trying hard to make this feel like a big-time atmosphere. I sometimes think they're playing to, like, Fox Network executives or their family or friends or kids who might be watching. And I love that they show, like, scenes of the arena and they do the postcard shots of the city they're in. I think that's a cool thing that they do. It's a little something they could easily not do. I think it's nice. But Cole is like, big-time atmosphere. And when Charlotte's coming out, big-time match tonight, big-time feel. And it's like it didn't have a big-time feel, but, you know, their job isn't to tell the truth. It's to set the stage in as bold of a way as they can to make you think you're watching something important, but it does feel more like lip service. And the Bischoff little cameo segment, Kid Rock being in the front row, I think it all adds up, and Jeff Jarrett too, it adds up to making the show feel a little more special. Without that, this would have felt like a real throwaway show. I mean, part of this is WWE just stripping their roster down where there's not a lot of bench. There's not a bullpen, whatever sports analogy you want to use. And so you're getting some rematches and you're getting people who have just been defined in a very specific comedic role, filling a lot of TV time. And I thought the percentage of time that on camera on SmackDown until the main event that was in-ring wrestling was as low as I can remember it. I'm sure there's been some lower ones, but it was like a lot of short matches with commercial break in the middle or matches that were so short there was no commercial break in the middle. And it felt like there's a couple minutes of action and then an angle for a finish that just sort of justifies redoing the match slightly different next week. And it felt recycled from last week in that way.
Yeah, I agree with that. What was also really interesting, Wade, was I noticed this really by the half point of the show, there wasn't very much backstage segments or anything from a narrative point of view that was really written for the show. It was like any angles or any of the, you know, anything that was supposed to be, you know, advance some form of the narrative took place in the ring with regard to the actual finish of the matches. But it just seemed like it was just put out there at the last minute. I mean, this is one of those shows that you wouldn't be surprised if they just said everything was thrown away at the last minute and basically just the segments were produced as just the matches, because they're really I can only think of a couple of backstage segments that took place on the entire show. Now, in some cases, that might be a good thing, but it's really not a good thing when it just basically feels like, I don't know, like a glorified main event show, which at times throughout this show – it really did feel like. And there's a definite reliance on characters that you would have never anticipated there'd be a reliance on. I mean, we're at the point where Madcap Moss is one of the like preeminent backbones of SmackDown, tentpoles, I would say. That's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous part to be in. And that's not to say he's doing a bad job. I think he's actually doing a great job. But, you know, that's not really, when we're talking about the year that we've seen with all these stars, with all the potential in the world being released, and this is what we're left with, it's not exactly, you know, a SmackDown that sings of glory days looking at you.
No, no. And there was like Kofi and Madcap in an 8-minute match, of which less than 5 minutes airs, a Lee and Natalya match that goes 2 minutes with the DQ ending, and then a squash Viking Raiders beating Los Lotharios, who deserve better than this, and then Charlotte and Naomi going 2 minutes. And then Ricochet getting squashed by Sheamus, basically squashed, in 3 minutes. It, like, one or two of those matches on a SmackDown with another match that feels like a good anchor match that's longer and better and features stars you care about who are in a meaningful program, like, that's one thing. But this felt like everything until the main event was the kind of filler stuff that usually pads between more important segments. And this show just didn't have that gravitas until, as Kyle points out, Roman Reigns. Oh, there's Big E. That's special. Big E came out with Kofi. There are a couple moments that made it seem that propped it up. But when you really look at it, it was a one-match show, and the rest was more filler than usual, more of the stuff that just kind of binds the show together between the bigger segments.
Right, but here's the problem with even that, though, Wade. Big E hasn't looked as average as he did tonight in months.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, this was, when you talk about a defining down moment, and by the way, as a like an actual performer, he looked miserable out there.
Bummed out.
He looked totally bummed. I mean, almost to the point where you're like, is there going to be a heel turn happening right now? Even though you know there wouldn't be. Like, he just literally carried with him a look of, can you believe this is where I'm at right now? You know, and then on top of that, I would argue, I think Roman Reigns is getting a little bit too average looking at this point. You know, there he was present every week through the entirety of this reign for the most part. Yes. But there's just a difference in his presentation without Paul Heyman that I think does come through, that you realize, hey, there is a difference. And maybe it's not even just the content and not even having Paul Heyman doing the acting with him. It's a confidence that comes from having someone at your side that sometimes you just can't predict for a performer will be there. So there are two pieces that I think were definitely standing out of this week's show.
Yeah. Kyle, back to you. Any follow-up or a different topic you want to bring up?
Yeah, it's that whole thing with the men's side was just so lacking of top baby faces. Same thing with the women. There's Charlotte, and she just beat Naomi very quickly because of Sonya Deville. It feels like Charlotte's in limbo because she had Sasha, but she got injured. Xia Li, I feel like it's too early. And thank God she came back too. She just disappeared, and now she finally came back to help Naomi because of the protector thing, of that thing. So. There's that, but the lack of women as well is just so pathetic. And this whole thing with Sonya and Naomi started to become really boring. I view it as being racist from Sonya being just not liking Naomi because she's black. Don't give another real explanation. So, I mean, Naomi tried to figure out why she hates Naomi. Naomi hates. So he's Naomi. Adam Pearce is starting to is asking why what's going on with her and Naomi as well. So I don't. It comes down to as a viewer's perspective about racism because they're not giving any other fantasy storyline explanation of why Sonya hates Naomi all of a sudden. This is going on now for months. And again. What is Charlotte doing? She's going to be in the Royal Rumble match because she has no one credible for her to face. Becky has a title match at the Rumble, but Charlotte's going to be in the Rumble match itself. It's the lack of releases and injuries. That big injury from Sasha was a complete blow. That's what I think it just hit the nail on the head where just when that happened, Charlotte had no one else credible enough for her to face at the Rumble, the fact that she's in the Rumble match itself. So what you think about the whole thing about the women's division as well? That's also not good. I think that's done even worse, too. So what do you think about that?
Thanks, Kyle. Lots of comments, no periods. I love it.
Sorry.
No, I mean it. It's great.
It's like a menopausal monologue over there.
Just bang, 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 bang. I'm like, no I got to pay close attention here. Yeah. But no, you led to a good point, which is the women's division right now. First of all, Nick, your thought on Sonya, Naomi. Is Sonya just against like neon? Does she have bad memories of like tripping with Nia with the glow sticks in some club one night at a rave? Is there ever going to be an answer to this? Cole keeps saying, we don't know. Is this a storyline that just won't end and it should have? Or are you sort of intrigued and do you appreciate their taking their time with this? And as long as there's a satisfying ending and maybe there's a big chapter next week when they go one-on-one. My hunch is they'll punt again and just, you know, kind of, quote, drag it out. Your thoughts?
No.
No to what?
You were like Kyle there.
I was a little tangent.
When you asked him, am I looking forward to it or am I happy? But no. That was the number one question that just came bursting out for me. There is no direction here. Nobody knows where this is going. I agree with Kyle that it's impossible to not watch it and have your brain immediately go into a racism worry that's what the issue is here. I just think everybody's brain would go to that because there's no explanation. I also just want to say, Wade, thank God. Thank God we have a protector who apparently only comes out and protects someone for 1 week, then disappears for months. And then when they return to protect someone else, they don't go back to protecting the other person who they were protecting the last time, who still needs protecting.
Charlotte, being entered in the Rumble, your thoughts on where that's going. Do you think she's going to win and pick her own opponent? Is that the angle here? Does that If so, whether you believe that's going to happen or not, part two is that a good thing, a horrible thing, intriguing? How do you feel about it?
Well, I think her eliminator or someone who's going to humiliate her in the Rumble is going to be her opponent at WrestleMania. So, you know, I think there's a lot of different possibilities here where that could – how that could exactly happen and who could be the person behind that. But, no, I don't anticipate Charlotte winning again. You know, one of the things that Tom and I have talked about on our show, Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Venture, is that it's almost like reached the point, especially with the Women's Royal Rumble, where it's like they need to pre-map out for the next 5 years who they anticipate being the winners of the Royal Rumble. Because you're entering into that part where it's like you almost can anticipate a duplicate winner very fast because there's so few viable contenders for the opportunity to main event WrestleMania, if you would, from the current women's roster. So, you know, it's the worry is, are we going to have a Bianca Belair win so quickly after there was last year? Charlotte also just feels, again, too recent, even though that was a win that she had a couple years ago, which, as you can imagine, I was leaping into the air to celebrate, but in retrospect was a win that shouldn't have even happened. You know, so I think she's going to get the Brock Lesnar treatment when he entered the Royal Rumble a couple years ago, and she'll be dumped or have some kind of conflict that arises from within the Royal Rumble, and that will set the stage for whatever is awaiting her further down the line.
Kyle, back to you for some closing words.
I think what I'll leave off is that I am sorry to become really tiring of SmackDown lately, and they need to have something to change after at least the Royal Rumble. I can't really say WrestleMania, but really after the Royal Rumble, something needs to change. So it would be somewhat interesting headed into WrestleMania where they'll stop repeating themselves and not having Raw people over to SmackDown, which they need to do something after the Royal Rumble to make SmackDown interesting, either because it's just the Roman Reigns show and the Charlotte show, and that's it. And I don't know what else they could do with the lack of stars. And that's all I have for you for today, Mr. McCall.
Thanks, y'all. Good to talk to you again. Nick, how do you feel about the way they're handling the mix of Raw and SmackDown wrestlers at this time? Is it the best of some bad options, or do you think they should be more – find other people to bring up, some NXT wrestlers, hire somebody, go to the bench more, just use who you have and stretch it out? Or is it no big deal as long as it's short term?
Well, I think it's no big deal, Wade, and I don't think it's just because of, you know, the fact that SmackDown is not in a great place right now. I mean, in this era where we are with COVID, I think there is still going to be a need for when there's a top act that's taken out of a show unexpectedly to have a likewise name of similar stature replace that person. And I think that's important for the people who are buying tickets to these shows. You know, if I were attending a show, you know, in Philadelphia, and I have, you know, we shelled out a lot of money, and then I hear Roman Reigns is out, I don't want to see Gunther coming up right now. I don't want that, or I would want a Seth Rollins coming over there. You know, that's my expectation as an attendee. You know, for the viewers at home, I mean, yes, it would be tempting to say, and it would be more exciting to say, sure, let's bring up new wrestlers and everything. But this is WrestleMania season, and there does need to be a turning up of the heat to get people excited for these things. And bringing up NXT folks this time of year would not be the answer. So I do think all things considered, especially with the flexibility that is needed within this era of where we are, where the roster could change at any given moment due to COVID, I don't ultimately think it's such a big deal. Not as big of a deal as it has felt like in the past, where it just felt lazy.
All right. Our number, 347-215-8558. If you've joined us midstream, I'm Wade Keller, joined by Nick Barbati, and this is the SmackDown Post Show, and you're invited to call us. If you do call, push 1 on your keypad. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, Nick from Brattleboro, you are up on deck, William in San Diego. Nick, thanks for calling. What'd you think of SmackDown tonight?
Nicky's your night. Here we go.
Yes.
Wade, you are not a Nicky, in case you did not know that.
Yes, only we got to get Sean on the air, and then we can have a reunion at the Nicky's Club.
That's right.
And I got to say, from being on the show Yeah, no, Tom is sitting in some white corner of the room. It totally looks like a, you know, he's a hostage. I mean, it's really very funny. But
wait, it's like a really bad porno. Like, it's bad.
yeah, I could, okay, I'll check that. Check that. Was that
of
on
all
your bingo
kinds
card?
Of things I'm biting my tongue about. What's that, Nick?
Was that on your bingo card? Talking porno? No.
With Nick Barbetti, yeah. It's a big bingo
card. Lee, here, this poor woman is getting the tar beat out of her, and Xia Li takes all this time for her entrance before she comes and protects her. I know that's her thing, and her, you know, but it's just like, run in and then do all the stuff, you know. But one thing that I was wondering, and this is, I totally agree with you that, you know, Big E just looked so miserable, it seems like SmackDown could really use the Intercontinental title being front and center again.
Yeah.
To add...
And a full-fledged division of good wrestlers to wrestle for.
Well, yeah, fait accompli there. But, I mean, just to add, I mean, Roman is having to carry this. And without Paul there, I'd be curious to hear from your sources, is he still involved in the writing and everything, or did they give him a vacation? But having Roman has to carry this with the Usos, but having the Intercontinental title there, they could do every week, they could have a match for the title. I don't know if Shinsuke's injured or just doesn't want to fight. I don't know. I mean, I love that title. Tito Santana, when it was then a white belt, I love that title, and I just hate seeing it wasted.
Yeah, I love that title too. I started with Morocco and Tito and Greg Valentine and Randy Savage on into the whole group with the 90s with Henning and Bret and Michaels. And I mean, yeah, it's just that title has such lineage, and it's a shame because it is a historical asset that means a lot to the audience that watches SmackDown. And like AEW does with the TNT title, it can become something of value that occupies not quite the top tier, but wrestlers that you care about, and you don't have to bake in formally what makes an IC contender versus a world title contender, but fans kind of know. And they just don't do that. They don't carry enough talent to have a roster that isn't featuring basically every healthy body and some unhealthy bodies like Shinsuke right now who aren't active. They don't have a depth to not have everybody on every show. And so it's not even really an option to have an IC title division right now. That's not how WWE books and operates. It's one challenger at a time, and there's not even an undercurrent or this backstory that's planned out to set up the next contender. Like the Viking Raiders, they lost to Moss and Corbin 1 week, and then they win a four-way tag match and become number one contenders the next week. And it's like they try to rehab people because they book on a whim, and the IC title would be a real asset. So your thoughts on that, Nick, and then part two, what do you think of Roman without Heyman and really without that? I missed the dynamic with the Usos where there was a question of, is Jay going to take the abuse or not? How's Jimmy going to respond, and is he going to be different than Jay? They've gone back to just being identical bookends for the most part. So your thoughts on both of those things Nick brought up.
Well, yeah, okay, starting with the Intercontinental Championship, I think we all need to break up with the idea that the Intercontinental Championship is ever going to be something that it was before 1999. I mean, it's just we all have those same fond memories. You know, I have a picture at a wrestling convention with Ricky Steamboat, and I wanted the Intercontinental Championship in the picture. Yeah. That is so many years and eras ago that, you know, even bringing it into the conversation right now, I mean, it's like, it's not the same thing. It's the new WWE CW. I mean, it's just that it's just not ever going to be that again.
But there's nothing stopping it other than reality.
Yes, sure.
Well, my point in saying that is that WWE hasn't changed fundamentally or structurally in a way where Vince McMahon or someone couldn't just decide next week, we're going to make 2022 the year of having a secondary title on SmackDown really mean something, and we're going to add three or four wrestlers to the roster who are going to be, you know, in that division and fighting for title shots over the next 6 months with our eye on who's going to be in the division the second 6 months of the year. They could do that and it would work. You're just fatalistic and cynical and realist going, it's not going to happen. So you can say you want it to happen, but it just accept the fact that it's not your wasting breath.
Right. It's been 25 years, people, like a quarter of a century since that's happened. So, yeah, I think it's the likelihood of it is just not there. And I'm sure they have some business metric that has let them know that it's not worth their time or just, you know, his memory, who the hell knows, but it's not happening. So wait, okay. So going to, it was Roman as now,
minus Heyman without the Uso layer drama.
So I literally wrote on my note page, you know, the first thing I wrote was, oh, how I miss the old Jey Uso,
yeah.
The Jey Uso, you know, the one who is a star, the one who stands, you know, first of all, brighter than his twin. And I'm sorry for being, you know, evil by saying that, but I think it's just plain true. And just, you know, the emotion that he had brought to his character for, you know, the time in which he was really running as a single star. You know, he fading into the background really has been of a significant loss to the entire WWE storytelling. And I think it just stands out every single week when he's on there. And I think, yes, them becoming bookends is just, it's not only just boring and bland, but it's actually to the point of actually damaging not only of Roman, but of the Usos. Because, you know, we've reached the point where Usos versus New Day and just the Usos in general, I mean, they're doing like, you know, incredible moves, and yet it all just seems so ordinary and basic because we've just been so trained through the same image year in, year out. There's nothing that stands out as impressive anymore about it. Roman with just the Usos, it is not enough. It's not enough to keep him as, you know, the main event heel. It's not even, let me say, just main event heel. It's next level heel. It's next level character. It's in that next upper echelon of really special characters. He is still a fantastic actor in a WWE world, and he can, you know, perform the heck out of everything that seems to be given to him. However, that doesn't mean, like, Lucy was a tremendous actress, but having Ethel next to her only made her better, and he's missing his Ethel. And, you know, that, like, you go up and down the line in entertainment of the really star performers, it's okay that they might need a side piece to take them to that next level. And that side piece is just missing right now, and I think it's noticeable.
You're just trying to butter me up with I Love Lucy references.
Oh my God, wait, I can't with you. Like, if that's what buttering up is for you, then you'd belong in Minnesota because that's right up your alley.
Hey, you're the one who brought it up, but it's a great show. It's timeless. And very early in the fix, I had mentioned I Love Lucy, and Todd's like, nobody knows what that is. I'm like, you haven't seen I Love Lucy? I'd never seen an episode. I'm like, you can't be an American and not watch some of the, you know, classic black and white shows, and that should be like, you know, top three in terms of just familiarize yourself with it. So
now that we've firmly established on this show that Todd has toxic masculinity issues, yes, I agree that it is, it's time for us to make another Lucy reference sometime soon.
Although it's funny, when you first said Lucy and you didn't say Lucy Obala, I was thinking you were talking about Peanuts because we were talking about cartoons earlier. So, but then I caught on with Ethel pretty quick. All right. I just underline what you say about
it. So I just gave this wonderful analysis.
You did, it was wonderful.
And this is, we end up at Lucy and Peanuts. Yeah. Perfect.
What you going to do? If Jimmy hadn't gotten the DUI and it seemed to interrupt, you know, the storyline, it's like they took something away from him, but they also took something away from us as viewers following that. I'm curious where that would have gone.
No. It's not just the DUI. Wait, there's a vacancy in his step. I mean, there's just a vacancy in his overall performance. He seems less in shape than his brother, and there's just like a beat off about him. There's no denying that.
Yeah. All right. Back to Nick for any follow-up or new topics.
I'll just point out one thing, and it may just have been a gaffe or a botch, or it could be the beginnings of something. Jimmy was very late in giving Roman the microphone, and Roman definitely gave him a look. So as I said, I mean, it's either something very subtle that they're kind of leading back into, or it was just a botch, like, because Roman had his hand out and there was no microphone in it.
Well, I thought that was intentional, Nick. I thought that was to show, like, there's, like, to literally bring to mind that Paul Heyman is not there. Like, and
yeah.
That
oh, okay.
There is that vacancy. I thought that, too. I mean, if that was a botch, then there's other things that need to be going on backstage.
Oh, no. I think it was a storyline thing. And whether it's just to bring up the shadow of Paul Heyman or it's, is Roman going to get pissed off at Jimmy just, and we're going to build that avenue back up.
No, I
down
think
the road.
Jimmy's run as a solo isn't happening. And I think Jay has taken the stance of a Matt Hardy years ago to a Jeff Hardy where he's just going to stand by his brother. That's how I read
yeah.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, you wish they were doing more with the Paul Heyman storyline ever since Roman and Heyman broke up and the Superman punch was thrown on SmackDown. Because they've kind of – SmackDown hasn't really integrated what happened with Reigns and Lesnar and the Reigns kind of coming to Heyman's defense verbally. And then what's going on with Flat? Like, it feels like the shows and the storylines are kind of blended and convoluted because of the COVID thing with Reigns. But it feels like, shouldn't Reigns be talking about Heyman more? Shouldn't there have been a moment for following up on the breakup? And it just feels like they just hit the pause button on that, and they're going to revisit it after the Rumble because they had to change plans.
Right. Well, you definitely took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say the pause button has certainly been hit. I think that, it's hard, Wade, because I would like to see continued forward movement and, yes, more references to Paul Heyman. But if they know where they're going and they know the pace in which they want to move in, I don't want them to just jam in weeks of content just to have content. If we are going to have a more old school storytelling over the course of multiple months that still moves at a slower pace, I'm fine with it. It still leaves the impression, though, especially with the frequency of Roman still appearing, that there's a vacancy and there's a gap in the storytelling. So, yeah, I mean, all things considered with how they are relying on Roman week in, week out, it just seems so startlingly obvious that there is no Heyman references, and they need to rectify that soon.
Yeah. All right, caller Nick, go ahead.
Last point, and then I'll let you guys go. You got to have Dick Van Dyke in there right along with Lucy. Just those two shows, and you'll have America in the 50s locked down, and that's it.
Thanks, Nick. Yeah, well, that's why I didn't put Lucy. It's just the only black and white show. I did have Dick Van Dyke on my mind, and Mary Tyler Moore was great in that.
Yep,
all right,
yep.
Cool. Thanks, Nick.
Good night.
Appreciate it. Good night.
Good night, Nick.
Nick, you a Dick Van Dyke Show fan? Have you seen it?
I was actually just remarking today that it's amazing that he's still alive and everyone else is dying. Does that answer that question?
Not really. I mean, you can
oh,
know
okay.
Dick Van Dyke. You might know Dick Van Dyke from whatever schmaltzy 80s detective show he was in.
What was that, Matlock?
No, that was Andy Griffith. Or Andy Griffin. Andy Griffith.
Oh, okay. Wait, what were the 80s like? You know what I do have to say, Wade? This is a deep cut. Now, this is what I really want a listener to tell me. So, you know, one of my all-time favorite movies is Perry Mason, The Case of the Silenced Singer, which was filmed, I think it came out in 1989. Do you know who the star of that one was?
No.
Vanessa L. Williams, or like Vanessa, the Vanessa Williams.
Wow.
It was her first like real acting gig after the play of the Penthouse Scandal.
Wow.
So I bring that up because it's an 80s detective thing. So I want someone to call here tonight and say, or, you know, they can send me the tweet. You know, I hate the Twitter, though. You know, they can send me the a note saying that they have seen that. And then to prove it, I want them to tell us, you know, who killed her. Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, people do have internet access, but that takes probably more research than is why cheat? Why cheat?
I think something tells me Perry Mason and the Silent Singer isn't something that's appearing on Google much these days.
Yeah. The original Perry Mason, Dick Van Dyke, I Love Lucy, all good black and white shows to watch. Diagnosis Murder was Dick Van Dyke's detective series.
Perfect. Yeah. Now, let me ask you something. Wait, before we go any further, I know, but we're sticking on this theme. You ever watch A Very Brady Christmas?
I probably have watched some of it, but I didn't. I don't think I watched the whole thing.
The best Christmas movie of all time. Your son needs to watch it.
Okay. All right. I'll make note of that. It's good to have a Christmas movie that isn't just, you know, the usual three.
Or you can watch A Diva's Christmas Carol. And you know who stars in A Diva's Christmas Carol?
The Bellas.
Vanessa L. Williams.
All right.
You see how now you know under that now you know you can understand what Tom deals with on these.
Oh, I picked up on it already. I was doing shows with you before Tom.
I was going to say you're the original Tom.
That's true. Yes. All right. William in San Diego is up, and then Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. After that, William, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What stood out on SmackDown to you?
Hey guys, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to go back to the Aaliyah Lee thing. There's a couple of things that kind of irked me a little. Nick already briefly brought one of them up, which is Xia Li coming out and doing her whole dance on the way to the ramp, to the ring, while she's supposedly there to save Aaliyah, and Natalya just kind of standing there looking befuddled, which, I mean, in all honestly, if it were real life, that's probably what I would do too. If someone was like coming, walking down slowly, doing martial arts moves, apropos of nothing. But yeah, that just kind of seemed weird to me. And the other little thing that bothered me, which kind of segues me into more of the topic to talk about, was I don't know if this was something from production, something that maybe Aaliyah wasn't aware of that the camera was on her, or you know, a lack of experience or something. But the match ends on a DQ, and Aaliyah wins a technicality from getting beaten too bad by Natalya. And she's down there on the corner, and we kind of see her on the frame. The camera's on her. And as soon as they announce the winner, we see Aaliyah giving, like, a big smile, like, yeah, like, she's proud that she accomplished something. And it was, like, it was a small moment, but it kind of irked me. And the thing that I kind of wanted to segue into was that, you know, there's obviously a lack of depth on the women's division at the moment, and they certainly need all the names and all the people they can get. But Aaliyah is one of those names that for the longest time she's been in NXT. And, you know, obviously you never wish for anyone to lose their jobs or anything, but you look at all the people that have been released throughout the years, and Aaliyah is one of those that kind of stands out. Like, I don't want her to lose her job or anything, but I'm just like surprised that she has been around for so long and that they've given her this chance to like develop and to actually, you know, continue growing. So I guess my question, if I had to put it into a question, would be, was she ready for this spot to come up to the main roster, or did she need even more time down at NXT to grow and develop? Or is this maybe something that you're trying out? You know, like, hey, we've given you all these years down at NXT, so maybe it's time for you to sink or swim. So let's see how you do.
Yeah, Nick, what do you think about Aaliyah's arrival and how she's being utilized here?
So it sounds like you want her to lose her job.
Thank you for reading between the lines. I was actually trying to get to that. Yes, I hate Aaliyah. I don't want her to have a job.
I think there's a third option here, which is he doesn't think she should have the job she has.
Oh, okay. I think that of many people often that might be on these calls. No, you know, I think you hit it on the head where you said it's time to sink or swim. And I think that's a few of these acts. And I think sometimes it also just takes, you know, Vince or whomever in the back is watching these things to say, what does this actual performer look like, you know, in the SmackDown environment in this case? I think there's, you know, this odd thing with some of the female wrestlers where it's like, there's always a character who's introduced who, with like the fluke wins, like the Eva Maries, and I don't know where that character comes from or like why that is something to dust off so frequently. It's definitely not helpful to that person, and it's also not helpful to anyone that they beat to have that character that exists. But you know, it's as stupid as it sounds, at least we are getting some form of character development within the women's division that extends outside of the women's title program. That, you know, for a long time, unless you were in whatever that program was of the moment, suddenly your personality and any character that you had just evaporated. So, you know, I guess it's hopeful that something could be made of this Aaliyah moment, but there's nothing definitive about Aaliyah. I mean, she's a beautiful person physically, but there's nothing exceptional otherwise about her presentation, about her costuming, her entrance, you know, anything that she does in the ring, obviously. It's kind of hard. I've said this in the past about wrestlers, and I'm usually pretty right about it, I think, is like fast forward a year, do you still see that person on the roster? And I would say no.
Yeah. I get William questioning why she is there, given some who have been cut and some who are still in NXT. I mean, they're treating her as, you know, wide-eyed and, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm here. So in a sense, it actually builds into her character an excuse to seem kind of green and in over her head. I don't know if that's, you know, the best story to tell among all the choices you have and all the talented women out there, but
I actually think her acting is a bit better than most of the female performers. I think that's the why she's getting the chance. I think,
yeah.
William, you referenced that smirk. I actually think that smirk was very well timed and very well delivered. And it's something that honestly looked very simple for a performer to do. But I bet you it would have been you every other female that's probably currently, well, not every other one, but a majority of the people on NXT right now, if you ask them to do that spot, you would be looking at someone and you as a viewer would see them saying, look at me, I'm smiling right now. Not like a natural smirk that came on over her face.
Well, and yeah, I can agree with that, you know, she obviously, I mean, I bought it. I felt like she was actually proud of it. I just wouldn't know that that's the right way to portray your character. But kind of staying a little bit with the women and the lack of depth, we saw Summer Rae, of course, sitting at ringside, and the first thought I had was the way they were building it. It kind of felt like back in those, you know, old takeover shows when you would have like Matt Riddle or an Aleister Black sitting ringside, and it was like, look at the next big name that's coming to NXT. But that was before I saw all the other legends that they started bringing back, quote unquote legends. I don't know if Summer Rae would classify. You know, we saw Eric Bischoff and Jeff Jarrett.
Have any other suit jacket, by the way? That is like the most infuriating thing. Like, you bought one sequence jacket from ASOS and suddenly like you have to wear it every single time you appear on camera. Sorry, my God.
That's all right.
That's fine. No worries. The question I was going to ask real quick is that if you thought that was going to lead, and if you think there's any value in her name, because I didn't start watching wrestling again until back in like 2016, and I took like a 9 years hiatus before that, so I missed the whole Summer Rae. So I guess it's a bit of a two-part question. Do you think this is like a full-time thing of her coming back? And if so, does she bring anything to the table?
Nick, I have a question for you. Would you be better off listing Beth Phoenix's career highlights or career highlights?
You're setting me up for this. You know how I feel about Beth Phoenix.
I do, yeah.
Summer Rae. What did she do, Wade? Remind me. What was a highlight? Give me one highlight.
Oh, I don't think there is.
Summer Rae was the replacement with Fandango, or she like danced with Fandango, right? At one point, I'm telling you, she did.
Yes, she did.
Like she was like a replacement of whoever his dancing partner was, and she was like the heel version.
No.
Like she was like the Venom to the Spider-Woman.
I think she was like the first.
Oh.
Or no, her debut was as Fandango's dance partner. But do you know, because this was on the Fix mailbag this week,
uh-huh.
We had a question about her. What would you say if Summer Rae made her ring entrance, and you're a WWE announcer with 30 seconds to tell the truth and tout her? And did you know that she was a captain and a quarterback of a professional football team?
I did not know that. God bless her. That's great.
The Chicago Bliss of the Lingerie Football League.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So it'll surprise nobody that I don't know that information. So no. I can say I do not know.
Yes.
Do you want me to give her 30-second elevator pitch? Is that a challenge?
We had a challenge on the Fix, and Todd took it up. I added a little bit to it, although I used Wikipedia to cheat.
How was that fun?
Well, because the challenge was, what would you say, not what do you know off the top of your head.
Okay. Here she comes, entrant number 30, Summer Rae. You will recognize her as Fandango's original dance partner who transcended that role and went on to become a top-tier level female performer here during the Divas Evolution. Summer Rae is back, newly red-haired and ready to take on the competition. I hear she has brought with her all the skills from her lingerie football league back to not only throw a football, but throw the women of the match over the top rope. There. Is that 30 seconds?
Yeah, you did well.
I'm sold.
Timed out very well. William, how do you think you did?
Yeah, I'm sold. I want to see her back.
William, I wanted to die during every one of those seconds.
One last topic.
One more thing to address your question. I don't think she's around for long. She's 38. She's way too old for WWE's current approach to who they want to feature and invest in. And I think it's a pure cameo.
Yeah, but wait, isn't it good though that they are bringing back, you know, Summer Rae and Lita, even just so that they're not just having the like, okay, here's just.
Oh, yeah.
The obvious feeling of having someone just fill a spot during the Royal Rumble.
Oh, I have no problem with cameos to fill out the Rumble. I'm fine with that. And there are Summer Rae fans out there who 10 years ago were smitten by her or, you know, whatever. You know, they were fans of hers or have fond memories of everybody's first few years watching wrestling. Anybody who was on the screen, they're nostalgic to see again. And that, for some fans, seeing Summer Rae is going to be a cool thing. Seeing her front row tonight is going to get some people excited about seeing her at the Rumble again.
Wait, there is nobody out there that fits that category. I'm sorry to break that to you. There's no Summer Rae fans out there.
I think there's some 25-year-olds who have fond memories of Summer Rae.
Let me ask you this. What did Beth Phoenix do to get into all these Hall of Fames?
Well, Trago Stez Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame is she was in it because she had amateur. She was an amateur wrestler. And
That makes
sense.
Story
about joining the men's team, and she was a trailblazer. She gave a great speech. So totally buy into that. But yeah, I mean the Hall of Fame in WWE, it's not. There aren't actual standards, and it has to do, you know, oftentimes with things other than how much of a difference that you made or were given a chance to make in all the key metrics.
So wait, can I turn a question on you, Mr. Editor? I have a question.
You can ask me. I might dodge it. I don't know.
Okay, that's fair. But from the pre, you know, the era, I would say, of women's wrestling of that, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, even the mid 2000s, that Beth Phoenix in. You know, do you think that we have kind of exhausted the women from that era that will be now inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, or who do you still anticipate will make it there of the females of that era?
Oh, God.
I mean, yeah.
I would need a list. Honestly, I need a list on the left of who's in, because I don't have it memorized, and then a list on the right of, like, who isn't. And there's probably a few, but I don't, off the top of my head, I can't think of anyone who hits the threshold where people would be like, well, finally. Yeah, that's
well, right. You know who I think deserves – it's not a wrestler, but who I just am infuriated that people – yeah, I'm infuriated. But people like aren't like out with pitchforks that should be in there. I think Terry Runnels should be in the Hall of Fame. I think she was around long enough. She did enough.
Yep.
She as the Marlena character, and then did enough other characters. And I don't think after that Dark Side of the Ring episode you'll ever see her in there. And I think that's BS.
Yeah, I mean it is. I agree. If you look at who has made the Hall of Fame, Terry Runnels is right in the kind of middle zone of people who've already made it. Like, she's not a fringe bottom of the list, but she's not at the very top. But she belongs in there on the merits of her contributions, her TV time, the innovation of her character. I'm with you on that. But politics keep people out. You know,
not a fringe bottom. Wait, that's good.
I knew what was. I was just waiting. All right, William. Anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, going back real quick to the Sonya and Naomi segment. I'm kind of with Kyle and Nick on this one. I was just up to now pretty over it, pretty tired, not really caring about where it was going. And I think one of the things that kind of brought me to the point is that, you know, like you mentioned, we don't have an explanation as to why Sonya doesn't like Naomi. And the other thing is that there seems to be no repercussions for why Sonya was doing all this stuff, at least until now, where out of nowhere we had Eric Bischoff backstage giving a speech to Pierce,
Adam Pierce,
about how he needs to be a leader or whatever, and that just fell so flat for me because, yeah, for weeks they kind of ignored this thing of why isn't anyone higher up than Sonya doing anything about this? Why is she getting away with this? And then all of a sudden, this is the payoff. She, like, they just made a match like that, like out of nowhere. And to me, I felt like a proper payoff would have been to, I don't know, like you had Sonya saying stuff like, oh, as long as I'm wearing this suit, you can't touch me. So I don't know. I guess like maybe you could have had like Naomi trash her car or something to like get her to like want to get Naomi in the ring against her. But they just threw the match like that out of nowhere. So how do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, Nick, how do you grade the way that they got to one-on-one match, which may or may not turn out to be a full-fledged match after all?
Well, I mean, it's just gone on too long. I mean, this is an F at this rate for me. And for a storyline that was probably a C at best at its peak, you know, I understand that. I understand why Sonya Deville has her admirers. I don't understand why Naomi has her admirers. But I think, you know, that storyline just never fit. And it never fit that Sonya Deville could so blatantly just abuse Naomi and have no one really do anything about it. And it just felt like it was teleported from another world and just put into this show. And that's why it just never worked for me. So that's why it could never really excel to being an A-level storyline, especially when you have Sonya, for the most part, playing things so straight down the middle. What happened to the heel referee that was in here before? That part just disappeared. What happened to Xia Li's role? That disappeared. We are now tagging this onto Charlotte at times when she shouldn't be saddled with this storyline where she, you know, had a butt hit her in the chest and now she's got the visual pin loss to Naomi. I mean, this is just abuse all the way around of all of the, you know, really good female characters on SmackDown and Naomi.
That's just a universal timeless gripe that I have with wrestling logic. If someone's getting pinned, or their shoulders are down, they're getting pinned, and the ref isn't there counting, it doesn't mean you would have lost just because you don't kick out for 5 seconds. Because why bother kicking out if no one's slapping the mat? Like,
True, Wade. Thank you for undercutting my whole argument in front of people.
I mean, I'm undercutting the...
No, you're right, but that's just, you know...
This spot's been around forever, decades and decades. And it's like I've never understood. He would have won if it weren't for that. Well, no, I'm not going to bother to kick out. That takes energy. And why bother? Like, why bother if there's no referee counting? It's just, I'm going to lay here and take a break. If I kick out, they're going to start punching me and kicking me. I'm just going to lay on my back and catch my breath while the referee catches his breath, her breath. So So that's one thing. The other point, this is another neither here nor there. Adam Pearce is pretty proud of how Buffy is right now based on the last 2 weeks. Is that why we had the whole thermostat thing so we could take – no, they were cold. They were bundling up. But he's been shirtless and tight shirts the last 2 weeks. Not shirtless, jacketless.
Okay.
Is that weird? Does it seem like it's up to dress code? Should we be walking around in a tight buff t-shirt looking buff right now? Shouldn't executives dress more professionally?
I have to say none of this stood out to me.
Okay. Fair enough.
So unless he was like wearing a feather boa and a thong, Wade, I mean, I don't think he was doing anything wrong in there.
Okay. All right. William, appreciate the call. Any quick closing words for us?
Yeah, a quick thing that I want to mention was the Sami Zayn segment. I was kind of on board with it a bit with the whole, you know, it was pretty obvious that Sami was faking the whole thing. And, oh, here comes Johnny Knoxville, and he's actually getting a pretty good reaction. And up to that point, I was like, you know, mildly enjoying it. I'm not really having much of a problem with it. But then Johnny Knoxville takes the cow rod and uses it against Sami Zayn. And this time it's supposed to be real, and it actually works. And they play like an even more cartoonish sound effects than they had been using for when Sami Zayn was actually supposedly faking it. And that just like, you talk about like overproducing stuff, Wade, and you know, coincidentally we had Eric Bischoff on the show, and you mentioned in that context about how Bischoff always talks about that. But yeah, that was like one of those things where WWE just like couldn't play it a little bit more, be a little more subtle than that, and it would have been more believable. But that's all I had. Thank you guys for taking the call.
I love that the sound of the cattle prod extended long after the cattle prod actually stopped.
Oh, it just was just eye-rollingly stupid. They just can't help it. I mean, like, Xia Li and the blue lightning thing zapping out of her fingertips or whatever. It's like, okay, it's augmented reality. We understand part of pro wrestling is the pomp and circumstance and special effects of these and ring entrances. You have the virtual Roman Reigns and all the stuff that they do. Okay, that's fine. I agree, on a run-in to save someone, I'd be mad if someone stopped to do their routine and she's a new act and they want to get that augmented reality stuff over. That looks bad. But adding the sound effect was just inexcusable. I mean, it's so dumb and not worth it. I mean, it's one of those things that doesn't pass the 6 or 7 year old test. It's like in 20 years, somebody go, when did you know wrestling was fake, to like a 6 year old? Oh yeah, that zapper thing with Sami Zayn. That was so dumb when they added the sound effect to it. Cause the segment is fun. Sami can make anything fun. And, you know, the idea that it wasn't turned on and Sami was pretending it was and Knoxville then zaps them. I mean, that's fine. I mean, it's a fun little celebrity storyline for the Rumble. And like I said, Sami keeps things interesting. And celebrities can be really annoying. Jon Stewart was really annoying. And he's like my go-to example of a bad celebrity performer who just hammed it up so much. It was just intolerable. Johnny's been good because he's not trying to steal the show. You know, he's more the straight man for Sami. What have you thought of Johnny so far?
I actually think he's good. And to be honest with you, I'm surprised by how many people remember him. And seem to, like, be welcoming him.
They're chanting his name. They like him. Usually wrestling fans, you know, it's tough to be cheered as a celebrity.
Yeah, for sure. And he just seems really, really enjoyable. That kind of stuff around Royal Rumble season does not bother me. I mean, he spits more in their world than, say, like Drew Carey did back in 2001. I mean, this isn't too bad. The Jackass guys were – like they were in SummerSlam 2007, I think it was. You know, they've been around.
Cool. William, appreciate the topics. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, guys. You too.
Thanks.
Yep. All right, we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Thanks, Ryan, for calling. Thanks for holding. What stood out on SmackDown for you?
Got a question on Roman Reigns. Do you think they'll get him a manager, like, say, a Triple H or a Shane McMahon, to, like, interfere in this Royal Rumble match, and then, like, leading up to WrestleMania, will be a little bit less obvious that Paul Heyman's turning on Brock Lesnar to get back with Roman? He's already with someone.
I guess if he – I don't know. Okay, let me back up. Nick, how obvious do you think it is, and how many people are thinking it's obvious that Reigns and Heyman are going to be back together by the time they get to, you know, a WrestleMania match?
I think it's very obvious. I was thinking, it's funny you asked me this. Wait, I was thinking this while I was working out earlier today. It's like WrestleMania can't end with Paul Heyman turning on Brock Lesnar because that's so obvious, right? But I think Roman prefers Paul Heyman there, which will be reason alone for him to return to him. What's the question, Wade?
Do you think it's obvious? Do you think the majority of people watching SmackDown are and Raw are going, oh, Heyman's not really loyal to Lesnar, or ultimately if he has to choose, he's going to choose Reigns, he's going to turn on Lesnar?
Yes. I think the majority does think that.
Yep, and that's not a problem. We talked about I Love Lucy. Predictability is not a problem. You know, you might know what's going to happen. You still want to see it happen because you're into the players, the key players.
By the way, we didn't talk about I Love Lucy. I referenced it. You went on some thing about it. So just putting that out there.
I'm just saying you made a reference to it. It's good to know what you're referencing. It's part of pop culture. You validated my argument. Now, it doesn't mean you think it's a good show, but you obviously know about Lucy and Ethel. So with Lucy, I always knew she was going to get in trouble and she'd get caught. And you want to see her get caught, you know, with whatever scheme she was trying to pull on Ricky, her husband. So, yeah, Paul Heyman's Lucy here. He's got a scheme going. Fans know. They don't care that they know. They want to see how it plays out and what the reaction of everybody turns out to be. And so we're good with that. Idea, Nick, that Ryan brought up, which is what about a red herring manager for Reigns? And does anyone come to mind? And Nick, you muted yourself. I don't know if you know that. Oh, Nick dropped off. So let me try to bring Nick back here. All right, Nick's back. Hey, Nick.
Sorry about that.
No problem. That happens. Going to Ryan's question, would it be good to put a red herring manager in Reigns' corner to maybe make people think, well, maybe Heyman's not going to end up back with Reigns? And does anyone come to mind? He mentioned Triple H or Shane.
Yeah, so Ryan, I do think that is possible. You know, wait, I'm actually kicking myself over here because I did make that prediction recently, and I can't remember who I said. But yes, I do think it would be helpful to have that, you know, almost like that feeling of like when Jimmy Garvin traded in his valets. And, you know, it just feels like it won't be so obvious if there is a Paul Heyman switch. Or heck, you know, sometimes even that replacement is even better than the original. I'm someone who always thought, you know, I thought Vicky Guerrero was better with Edge than Lita was. And I think sometimes you can just extend out because, I mean, simultaneously, you have Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, who both greatly benefit from having Paul Heyman there. And I do think there's a nostalgia pull of having Paul Heyman with Brock Lesnar. So, you know, if you can get someone else compelling with Roman in the interim, I think it's definitely worth trying. You know, I would have to give some thought to remember who I said, and I thought it was quite brilliant, actually, at the time. But, I mean, I think this is a role, and I'm not saying this person, but I think that Sonya Deville at one point could have been a good, you know, person to be at Roman's side. I think there are certainly others who could fulfill that role. And I actually have long wanted, you know, a woman at his side. I just thought visually it would really, really work. And a woman that he respected, not like a woman that was like almost like a womanized character. I just think there's a dynamic with Roman that is so good and so adaptable that would really make for compelling TV to almost mix it up outside of the Paul Heyman, you know, bubble that's created.
Okay. Ryan, any follow-up on that or a new topic?
This is a new topic on Adam Pearce. I think there's a pretty good probability he's going to screw Naomi next week. I heard like a rumor that maybe they're doing like a romance, like angle between him and Sonya. So maybe that's why he always takes her side so much recently.
Nick, any thoughts?
I missed who he said was going to be the romance angle with Sonya.
Adam Pearce.
Ryan, you cut out there? Yeah.
Adam Pearce. Okay, I missed that again.
Adam Pearce and Sonya.
Oh no, I just take it that the Sonya Deville character doesn't go that way. I don't know. Did I make that up?
No, you didn't make that up. I guess the punchline could be Adam Pearce asked her out and she goes, "You didn't know?"
Yeah. I don't think they would do that. They avoid that whole thing.
Yeah, I would look new places for rumors, Ryan. And wherever you heard that.
That's just an observation from watching the show because it seems like he takes her side, you know, with Naomi, and there's no really good reason for him to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't picked up on that. I don't think that's a storyline they're playing up, and I haven't picked up on those vibes. Doesn't mean I haven't missed something, but that'd be weird for a variety of reasons. I just think it's a poorly written storyline that could be written better, and I think they've changed their mind. Or Vince McMahon has changed his mind a handful of times about where he wanted to go with where Pearce and Deville were in terms of their dynamic. And a lot of it is just written by the writers to get through this week's show and until they kind of decide where it's going to land. And that's not ideal. And it can lead to some misconceptions of where they might be going because you're putting more thought into it, Ryan, than frankly they are.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my final question
Anything
is
else?
On
yeah.
Yeah, my final question is on Eric Bischoff. This Xia Ling character, is it possible that Eric Bischoff, this is like an old idea when he worked for the company like a few years ago, because it seems a lot like female version of Glacier with like all this martial arts high tech stuff.
All right, thanks, Ryan. I definitely don't think Vince McMahon is thinking about Glacier when coming up with a presentation for Xia Li, and I don't think Eric Bischoff suggested it. I don't think it's a I think the comparison fits. I mean, honestly, the hype, I hadn't thought of it, is kind of similar between the two, but I think it's pure coincidence.
But, you know, wait, I got to tell you, can I tell you what I was thinking of? And it just restruck me as you're mentioning Eric Bischoff. I do think it's odd that Eric Bischoff and Jeff Jarrett were on this show. You know, I was just doing a quick search because I know they're doing like a little like mini tour together of shows, but what's interesting is not it doesn't appear that they were doing one in Nashville this week or anything like that, but also they're doing one of those like cheater brand shows, like leeching off of the Royal Rumble by doing something like a couple hours in advance. And it just seems so odd to me that WWE would reward that with spots on their show. Like that I just don't understand. What is your thoughts on that?
I agree. I thought I was curious why they were on the show. I mean, the idea is, well, we're so short on talent with Xavier and Sasha and Drew out. Who am I leaving off? Is there someone else who's off the show, a top half roster person? You know, they needed to fortify it. And if they had access to Bischoff and Jarrett, they might have said, hey, come in. We'll find a way to write you into the show. It may be that simple. I don't know what business they would have otherwise to be meeting. You know, with Jarrett Nashville, that makes sense, but Bischoff, it doesn't. So I don't know. I sort of half for more than half expect there'll be some clarification on that. But I didn't get a sense Bischoff's going to be a recurring character. I mean, he was treated as a guy who, as Pat McAfee slyly slipped in, that is 82 weeks of success speaking right there in Eric Bischoff, which is yes, it's the name of his podcast. It's also a bit of a slight on the number of, quote, years that Bischoff was actually successful, according to, you know, maybe Vince McMahon's reading of things. By the way, how are you doing on Pat McAfee these days?
You know what? When you talk, you're going to think I'm crazy. And by the way, bring it. You talk about someone who I think if they were to, like, sideline Paul Heyman, who I think is a good enough mouthpiece to put as a side for a main event act, I think one day Pat McAfee would make a really good manager. You know, I'm high on him. Wade, you and I were on the call his very first show, and it was not great. I just think I think there is a level of enthusiasm that you know, he carries with him, and it's undeniable to say that I do think he has a name value outside of wrestling that is definitely – that carries with it something that would make a casual viewer pause. And I do think he rises above like almost every other announcer that's out there right now, and that's a total compliment to him.
I thought he dialed it down this week compared to the last handful of weeks. I thought he had become, in recent weeks, unbearable. I thought he just came across as a lacking credibility, over-the-top to the point of just cringy embarrassment hype machine. And I didn't feel that way about him early on in his SmackDown run. I thought he found a level of having, you know, he liked Shinsuke's dance. Okay, great. And but he had a knowledge and enthusiasm and a passion for the product, but it didn't come across as teacher's pet. I want bonus pay for just going, oh my God, about everything. And it was just too much. This week, it was weird. He referenced poop twice, pooping pants and a poop sandwich. I don't know, again, if he's trying to kiss up to McMahon, who likes scatological humor, or if he's got a thing for that, or if he just doesn't have a lot of – if he just was just sleepwalking through his one-liners. But you know, most of the time, early on I liked him. Lately I've liked him less. Tonight he was better, and this was a better version of him. You know, he went crazy for Stupendous and the whole dictionary bit. I thought that worked. That was fine. You know, I thought it was actually – it's weird, but I thought it was good that he told viewers, don't try this at home with a zapper. He might have saved a life or two.
I got to tell you, Wade, I and this is just full disclosure, I'm not as sensitive to, you know, listening to announcers as I think a lot of fans are. And I'm not saying that, like, as if I'm better. It probably makes me a worse fan or not. But I when I hear people either praise or criticize people from an announcing perspective – I don't know. I just always am somewhere like where I just – it's not something that stands out to me, I think, as much as it does other people. What I would say, and I'm not trying to be funny when I say this, and you know how I feel about AEW and all that stuff. The only announcer anymore that really stands out to me as being, like, painful to listen to is Jim Ross. I find the grumpiness, like, too off-putting. I just can't in that setting. And, you know, wait, I said this – years ago, Wade, by the very first time I ever interacted with you, this is a true story, Wade. Go back in time. This was easily 10 years ago, I think. I don't know, maybe not, but somewhere around 10 years ago. You did I guess it wasn't a Torch Talk, but like it had Jim Ross on one of your interview shows.
Yeah.
And I wrote to you afterwards, and you read it on the show, or it was something you said, where I said, I've always liked Jim Ross. But if the Jim Ross that you interviewed was the one I had to face every day, I would bully him on air too. Yeah. And that's the Jim Ross that I now hear every time I turn him on in whatever capacity, whether it's the podcast or when I've heard him on AEW. And I find it a pretty hard listen. Sorry, I don't know where that tangent came from. Something I had to say.
Yeah, no, fair enough. You're talking about announcing. I think announcing is like vital to setting the tone of the wrestling show, backing up angles. You know, if there's like on Raw, there were heels doing things and the announcers are like, well, that's just proving a point. And it's like, no, it wasn't proving a point. It's something you should be decrying. You should set the tone. That's not something that should be praised or excused. And there's this, you know, both sidesism to some of the announcing. And I think it undercuts the whole point of heel trying to get heat by cheating. All that stuff I think is important. I also think you should want to, and this gets to your Jim Ross example, you should want, like with talk radio or podcast, you should want to spend a couple hours with these people. You know,
right.
I find Excalibur at times good, at times sort of dry, kind of in a Mike Tenay, I don't take sides type way. I've got all my wrestling knowledge, but I'm not going to really have an opinion on anything other than wrestling moves are cool. And I like my announcer to have more personality than Excalibur shows. Every once in a while, he sneaks in something that's resembles a sense of humor, and I'd like more of that. But I mean, the AEW announced trio, they sort of complete each other. Ross, I experienced it on phone calls with Ross where I'd call him up. Hey, Jim. Be like, I'd go, hey, Jim, it's Wade. Yeah. That's how he greeted me. And it was
I can imagine.
But 10 minutes later, we were rolling on a great just conversation about wrestling, and he talked my ear off for an hour 20 minutes. So he warms up slowly. He is, I don't know, you know, what it is, but yes, he comes across as grumpy I would like a Jim Ross that just is enthusiastic and in charge and loves the product. That's the Jim Ross people love. I still think he has some good weeks, some bad weeks on AEW. I think there's still some value. That's a whole other discussion. Okay. McAfee, at one point, DoorDash sponsored a mid-match replay. And McAfee, and this is where he cracks me up. He goes, DoorDash, that changed my entire life. And Cole's like, yeah, me too. Like, it's just, and his delivery is way better than mine. But, like, he just has these asides that crack me up sometimes. And I like that Pat McAfee, who's more understated and less just frothing and gushing in an over-the-top way.
Yeah. Okay. I see it.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. What was I going to – oh, Sheamus and Ricochet. What do you make of how Ricochet was featured here and talked about? Is this just, hey, it's Sheamus, he's on a roll, there's no shame in losing to him? Or is this, oh, Ricochet, he's just so bland, all he can do is moves, we don't really know what to do with him, he can't talk on the microphone, let's just have him be a talented jobber, and that's how we see him now. Like, did he extrapolate anything from how the presentation was this week?
No, and nothing different other than, I mean, that's like, this is just now the run-of-the-mill treatment of both, which is that Sheamus is treated a little bit better than the average mid-carder, and Ricochet is just, you know, set up to job quite a bit. I do think Ricochet is going to have a good showing in the Royal Rumble match, though, and I think that might be a chance for him to be resuscitated quite a bit. I'm hopeful. In the old, like, Kofi Kingston kind of way.
Did Kofi regain what was a defining down loss to a mid-card comedy figure who I don't think most people see as a future world title challenger in Madcap Moss? Now, that might end up being wrong, but I'm talking about today's perspective on him. Did Kofi recover at all by getting, quote, his win back in this perpetual even-steven 50-50 booking that WWE does? Or is Kofi sort of damaged by the fact that he's just going even-steven with a guy who tells jokes and people don't really see as a star?
Kofi's not damaged by going even Steven. Kofi is damaged by not seeming to have the drive that he used to, I think.
Yeah.
And I think you're wrong about Madcap Moss. I think Madcap Moss, I mean, not maybe you're not wrong, but I don't think that's doing justice. I think Madcap Moss is doing great work. I actually think he stands out in quite a big way. And I didn't hear you put him down. I just mean in general,
yeah.
Like, I think he's really better than I think the temptation would be to grade him at, you know, based on, you know, the team up with Baron Corbin and just the frequency in which we're now watching him. Here's the thing. The fact that we're seeing so much of him means he's well-liked. I mean, I think that comes across pretty clearly. I mean, this is someone who was basically dead on arrival, you know, seemingly a very short time ago. And now just is just a vital part of the show, and I don't think he's going anywhere. And I think he is going up, maybe not all the way to a world championship type level, but I think he's going to be around for a long time, and he looks great.
Well, in your point took kind of my second rephrasing of the question away, because I was going to say I could just as easily focus on, did Madcap Moss lose something that he gained last week? Because I wrote, hey, this win last week is a sign that management, as you just said, and I agree, sees something more in Moss than being a sidekick to Happy Corbin. Getting a win over Kofi, say what you will about how they feel about Kofi, but you can look at this as, should they have had Madcap lose to Kofi and basically extinguish whatever statement was made last week? That's a frustration with WWE's 50-50 booking, is it looks like they're making a statement with someone, and it's not that they get cold feet. They just didn't mean anything by Madcap's win last week, and they don't mean anything by him losing this week. It's just a way to fill TV time, and then they'll just assume you have a short memory whenever they decide to push him in a different way later.
Yeah, I don't think Madcap – I don't think with Madcap it matters whether he wins or loses. I don't think he really gained anything from the win last week, and I don't think he loses anything by losing this week. I think Madcap is a character that just as easily could win the Intercontinental title next week, and it wouldn't be a surprise. I think the comedy element of him is what's going to carry him in a Sami Zayn kind of way, and I think he's fine whether he wins or loses. I don't think these wins help or hurt anybody involved. I just think the New Day at this point is just in a bad, bad way. I really do.
Yeah, I don't think Big E wants to be back tag teaming with Kofi, and Kofi, I just, the dancing, exuberant thing just feels going through the motions, put on, where's my check, let me cash it.
Well, that's way nostalgia at this point. Like, it's like pre-nostalgia. It's like the moment where, like, the act goes bad and then should come back in 5 years at a Royal Rumble to be nostalgic again. That's where Kofi is right now.
Yeah.
And Xavier Woods is unwatchable.
Oh, I'm so with you on that. Oh. Okay, two other quick things. Sheamus, how do you feel about his trajectory? He had a great a really good 2021, late 2020, in fact, in a really good 2021. Are they taking advantage of that? He got this win with Ricochet. He paid some lip service to being a Rumble contender. How do you grade how they're doing having him in the conversation as somebody who's believably might win the Rumble or at least be in line, say, for a title shot post-WrestleMania? What course do you think they're on with him?
I think they're on the same course they've always been with him, which is going up and down the mid-card to upper mid-card level. I don't think anything compelling is going to be going beyond that. And I think he's always someone that has enough credibility that you could feasibly introduce him around Royal Rumble time. And you could view him as a decent enough threat to cause like destruction in the Rumble, but not win. And will always just be around enough to have a mid-card match at WrestleMania.
And then finally, the Los Lotharios Viking Raiders match. Viking Raiders win quickly. Do Garza and Carrillo deserve better than this? Would you be pushing them ahead of the Viking Raiders, setting aside the heel face dynamic with whoever happens to be the tag champs, which can sometimes dictate who's winning here? And do you think the Raiders are worth giving these wins to these last couple of weeks? Or is it just a matter of looking around, they're the only babyface tag team that can be credible as challengers?
The Viking Raiders have more of a like a snap to them than the Los Lotharios do. There's something missing with Angel and Umberto. There's a spark missing with them. I don't think they've shown enough to get more than they've gotten. And I like Angel. I think he is an extremely handsome man. I think he's got a lot of charisma in his look, but the charisma seems to like fade a little beyond that. And I would have made the same booking decision tonight that was made.
Any other thoughts on SmackDown here before we sign off?
Wade, that went so fast.
Thank you.
Keep talking to me. Stay minute.
I got nothing more. I'm asking you.
Wait, call me off guard here.
We did more than an hour and a half.
Wait, when are we getting the Hall of Fame inductee announcement?
Ooh, good question. Probably 3 weeks after the Rumble.
3 weeks?
Yeah. I mean, there's a big gap between the Rumble and Mania. And you got the Saudi show.
Should I go to that Saudi show?
Yes. I know you talk about that a lot. I think this is the one you should go to. I think you go to WWE.com, and there's a place you go for, you know, big fans, look for places to buy tickets for big matches. There's some fans who have seen every Elimination Chamber in person. They want to be there again.
Perfect.
You
yeah.
can be in the building with them, buy that ticket. You're going to be, every time they go there, they say that the Saudi businesses and the people love everybody.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they would love everything about you, Nick.
Yeah. I'll go if you go.
I'll stick to not traveling.
Some journalist over there. No, yeah. You know what? Wrap it up, SmackDown. It's not the show that it was. And I don't know that the show was, in retrospect, ever great as it was. Characters were written really, really well. And I just think a choice needs to be made within WWE, like, you know, and to really, you know, search for the soul of SmackDown again. And what does it take? You know, it didn't – so when SmackDown was at its peak, it was not because Brock Lesnar was there, because he was not. It was not because they had some stellar roster, because they did not. It was because there was so much care to the core of the show, and it just fed into all directions of what was being presented. And you got to get back to that, you know. The fact that SmackDown thrived more when there was no crowd there than it is thriving when there actually are people there, you know, that's kind of a problem. And, you know, there's only so much that Roman and Charlotte can do as the top acts of the respective genders to really keep, you know, all things going as making that show feel important. Like I said, Wade, if you really were to take a look at it, it felt like a taped show today. It looked like a taped show. Like the beats of it was – felt slow. It felt like I was thrown off a little earlier because you made reference to, you know, how little in-ring action was. Honestly, I didn't track that because to me, every segment felt like it lasted forever. Everything felt like even Roman's entrance, which I know was long.
Oh, that was long.
But it felt like we were just like, they were like under mandates to like fill time. The fact that main event segment lasted a half hour was just like, I can't deal with this anymore. You know, it just, beyond, like, at that pacing, that's a turnoff to every bit of it. So that's the state of SmackDown, according to Nick.
So any teaser of what's coming up on Nick and Tom tomorrow?
Well, you know, Tom had this, like, emotional breakdown at the end of last week's show. Did you hear it? Like, out of nowhere, he throws me with, "So, Nick, what was your favorite episode of this past year?" And, you know, and starts going on this monologue about how much he's loved talking to me. And he asked me, like, what conversations do you remember? And I couldn't come up with one. So I said, okay. After we got off the show, I go, "Tom, what did you do?" He said, "Well, my favorite episode." I said, "What was your favorite?" He was like, "Well, I like the one where you took over the host chair." So he doesn't know this yet, Wade, but I'm going to do that again tomorrow on him. He thinks he's going to start off all fly, and then we're going to see what kinds of – and, you know, I'm a little crazy, so I take things on twists and turns, and by the end you don't even know what happened, and that's what the listeners heard tonight. That's what they're getting tomorrow.
Awesome. Well, go VIP, everyone, and you can hear Nick every week with Tom. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. Nick, it's always a blast. Thank you for taking time out on Friday night to spend an hour and a half plus here discussing SmackDown. Look forward to your show tomorrow.
Wait, am I your favorite?
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. I feel like I don't even need to say that anymore, but you're right, I should.
Wait, I know you're lying, first of all, and you say that to everybody. That's the second.
No, I don't say it to everybody, and the people who I don't say it to should not read into it. Read into it.
What's that Barnett guy? He got one of them. Yeah, and like we all, like, this is like the land.
Mike Myers.
Yeah, this is how what's his face started off. That the guy who's scared of me, Zach Haydorn, that guy. Yeah, like they all start off as like Wade's pets, but you know what, Wade? I hear a little. I keep you a little bit more on your toes than the rest, and you can't deny that.
Oh, I've loved it from the beginning that you do that.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, I'm not going to name everybody who co-hosts, but I
because you don't know them.
Well, no. I'm just saying there's someone in particular who I really enjoy, but I'm not going to mention them. So if I didn't mention your name, there's hope it's you.
You are a con artist somewhere ago.
Well, on that note, thanks, Nick.
Yeah, see ya.
Take care.